is my pleasure to present.
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down. Here's Carmichael Dave.
You know, one other thing. Well, we have several other things on the Raider game, but the kid they picked, what was it, Alex Leatherwood? I always get his name wrong. The one with the false start. He's gonna get crap for that, and I get it. It's easy. He's a rookie. Tough situation. Nobody else false started. Alex Leatherwood,
17th overall pick.
But if you go back and you watch that as well, and they mentioned it a little bit on the replay, Derek Carr totally changed his cadence up.
Yeah.
And he went with one of them set huts. In fact, I want to ask Sean about that too, being a former NFL quarterback. And I thought they made a great point. You don't change it up like that on the 1 foot line. Don't put your offensive line in that spot. Yes, he shouldn't have jumped off sides, but I think he shares a little bit of the blame with Derek Carr.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop everybody. Listen, Leatherwood was seen as a reach.
Yeah.
Where he was picked.
I thought
so.
It's not going to
help the narrative.
No, I understand that. But you got to, you know, come on.
I agree with you. I appreciate you providing actual context and not just making a hot take.
Thanks. Appreciate. Now we can't do that. Sports radio.
Yeah, no.
You can't. This
is a no hot take zone.
Soundgarden zone right now.
Soundgarden. Soundgarden. The cuts and clips that are catching our eye today. Soundgarden. It's time to go round the world with Soundgarden.
There's a national media site that, just before I got in here, published a story saying that Rodgers' uncertain status might have impacted things yesterday. Do you think there's anything to that as far as a leader goes? And you know everything happened in the offseason. Do you think there's any impact at all on that, on this year's team?
You're talking about the offseason?
Yes.
No, I think this team's focused on now, and unfortunately sometimes in this league you get humbled, and certainly we got humbled, and like I said, it's about how we respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Little lip service.
That's all Matt LaFleur. I don't know, you know, that's a tough call, dude. Let's do something that you should never, ever do in this business, and let's just hold off and wait a few games.
Oh, come on. Where's the fun in that?
I know. But, yeah, I'm done burying Aaron Rodgers. I've seen Aaron Rodgers buried more times than Undertaker. Does that work? When he does the hand over I don't know wrestling. I've seen him buried a lot, dude. And you know what? I said it yesterday. I'll say it 50 more times. R-E-L-A-X, relax. That's what he said. And look it. The Packers turned out just fine. They always turn out just fine. Until they don't turn out just fine, I'm riding with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, but Zen Master needs to play better in week two.
Of course he does.
You can't come in with that man bun looking like you just did whatever, naked yoga in the Fijis. And you better come in and step it up week two. I know he mentioned the entire team. But really, it was one guy that I think needs to come in and play better, and that is Aaron Rodgers. He has to set the tone in week two.
Yeah, he does, because if Aaron Rodgers has a bad year, no one's overcoming that on Green Bay.
Nah.
Number two.
Soundgarden.
I thought he mishandled a ball or two, uncharacteristically. He had a penalty call back, a big catch and run. He's the best player I've ever coached, so I'm going to continue to look for him. And sorry about that, Vic, but... you know, he's a hell of a player. He deserves some good looks.
Hmm. The best player he's ever coached?
It's John Gruden referring to Darren Waller, who had a monster game last night. I think that was the most targets he's ever gotten in his career. 10 receptions, over 100 yards, TD.
I mean, I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm saying I need to go back.
He coached Jerry Rice.
Well, right, but Darren Waller is better. Well, is Darren Waller better than Jerry Rice was as a Raider?
Oh, sure. Okay. I mean, Jerry Rice was at the end of his career, but to say he's the best player I've ever coached. John Gruden is the king of hyperbole.
No. I'm with you. I'm with you, and I like pounding on John Gruden as much as the next guy, but I know. I think you're doing a contextualization interpretation that I don't agree with, which is I'm going to take that as the player he coached, how good was that player at the time? He coached that player. As a head coach, by the way.
Coached Rich Gannon to an MVP award.
Okay, so yeah, right. So then is Darren Waller better than Rich? That is a fair question. I will say this.
Would have been Khalil Mack if you didn't trade him.
Wow, too soon, dude.
No, it's not soon enough, actually.
Darren Waller had 10 catches on 19 targets. I mean, you know.
He is the safety valve. I mean, if the epitome of Derek Carr's in trouble, get the ball to Waller. Chances are something good will happen.
The second highest targeted player was Hunter Renfro with 9. Nobody else had more than 5. What I'm kind of amazed by is this. How do we not have multiple Darren Waller documentaries? You know, I mentioned the Trey Lance documentary out right now. Darren Waller, let's not forget, was out of the league because of alcohol issues and other issues. He was done. He was off the scrap heap. He's a wonderful Darren Waller epitomizes the classic Raider reclamation story.
Oh, I completely agree with you. I just think it's too soon for the doc, but one will happen.
All right, number 3.
Soundgarden.
Cover 2, man. Eli, what'd you do? You set the alarm.
Fire alarm.
While we're watching the game. Oh, my goodness.
Ray, you're the best, man. Thanks for joining us, man. It's been a lot of fun. Man.
Thanks so much, Ray.
Hey, I learned a lot.
Appreciate that 0.0.
0.0.
I can't talk about it at barbecue.
That whole broadcast was a cluster.
Okay. So, the bad.
There's a lot of it.
You could tell that Peyton and Eli, and Peyton's kind of leading the charge, didn't really understand how to run a broadcast.
That's putting it lightly.
Number 2, I liked that they had all kinds of people on, from Russell Wilson to Travis Kelce.
Russell Wilson was on for a long
and
time.
And others. I love that. And obviously ESPN's leaning heavily on that. But there needs to be, it's very difficult when you have two people in separate studios and you bring in a third person with a slight delay in a conversational three-way. That's a very difficult thing for a seasoned broadcaster to have to do. I think if I was to be in the production meeting for that show today, I would say we're giving them too much to handle. There's only so much that you can drill and practice, and I'm sure they drilled and practiced. But technically, that show was a mess. Now, that being said, watching Peyton Manning and Eli calling out coverages and breaking down plays and talking unscripted and unedited about different players, different coaching moves, decisions, providing anecdotes of things they did. Peyton Manning at one point talked about, it was Derek Carr was yelling at a ref. And Peyton Manning says, one time I was fired up, we were getting our butts kicked, I'm paraphrasing here, and I lit into a ref. After the game, I felt so bad. I called the NFL and I asked for the ref's address because I wanted to write him an apology letter. And the NFL would not give me his address because they must have thought I was going to egg his house or something. Little anecdotes like that are priceless, and you're not getting that on a regular game.
So I think we're on the same page here. It was more the production of the broadcast, yes. Not necessarily the personalities. Did you feel like they needed someone to kind of lead them along? I felt like that they could have used somebody, not a traditional play-by-play guy necessarily, but someone even as a moderator for the two of them to kind of guide them.
I think that I completely understand what you're saying, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying if I'm in charge of that show, that's the last thing I want to do right now because I think the potential is there. I think Peyton especially has the talent to learn the craft, and they can do something that we've really never seen. I think they can get to a point, you have to trust it, but I think after a few games, they're going to get to a point where they won't need that. And if it turns out that you've got one and probably two Hall of Fame quarterbacks who happen to be brothers breaking down the game where you don't have to worry about announcing and all that, you've just got the Mannings and their friends coming in, I think this has the potential to be a complete breakthrough broadcast, and I'm totally here for it. And they have the right personnel to do it.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I'll give you that. There's a lot of potential there. I saw the potential. But to me, the producing and the production just needs to be way better if we're going to even get close to that.
I totally agree. And that's where the tactical crew really let them down. You've got to, it's like a coach. You've got to put your players in the right positions to succeed. We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice!
Coming up next.
All right. 3 for Madness. We'll continue this conversation. What do we think about that Eli and Peyton, Peyton and Eli broadcast? Let's give our first thoughts on a full Allegiant Stadium and respect. Who gained the most in week one? 3 for Madness is next.
1, 2, 3.
It's 3 for Madness time. 3 for Madness. 3 questions, 3 answers.
1, 2, 3. Woo!
It's 3 for Madness. Here's question 1.
All right, coming up in just under an hour, Sean Salisbury. I ask him all kinds of stuff. I want to ask him about the car quarterback sneak. I want to ask him about the 4th-and-1 play. We're going to play a little, since Sean Salisbury, I say this before, Sean and John Clayton, to me, are responsible, good or bad, and to me, they've still done the best version of it ever, for the debate shows. I think they're really the godfathers of today's debate shows.
Sean and John were great because it was, it wasn't as produced as the debate shows are today.
And they were great friends who went back and forth and made fun of each other. We're going to play a little game with Sean called Reaction or Overreaction Tuesday. And I'm going to throw some things out at him. And I want to know if it's just a normal reaction or if he thinks it's a week one overreaction, as we do each and every year. In the meantime, Justin Marshall is always overreacting because he's management. That's his job. And he has 3 for Madness for you right now.
Was the Peyton and Eli simulcast good?
Kind of. Look, it was like if I'm a teacher grading the student. By the way, I got to yell at my daughter's teacher today. That's gonna be a fun conversation. Guy gives her 5 hours of homework a night. Literally, she got home at 3 o'clock. Was still doing biology at 10 p.m.
for one class.
She ate dinner in her room. This poor kid. And you know, I got enough issues with my daughter. I'll call her out. This poor kid. And this isn't a one time thing. This is a multi time thing. First thing the teacher said to his classmate, hey, listen, if you get an A in my class, it's an accomplishment. I don't just hand out A's. You should expect a B. I only give A's for, I don't know what, I love teachers. I come from a family of teachers. It absolutely drives me crazy. I don't care what happened to you in your life, dude. Don't take it out on the kids.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway.
So I should tell John Gruden that, too.
The reason I my mind went there is because if the Peyton and Eli broadcast, if I was a teacher grading them, in the notes, it would be in the parent teacher conference. It would be one of those. They can do the work. They can be successful at this, but they're missing some fundamentals. Now, I'll speak especially of Peyton Manning, but Eli Manning, who gets cracked on a lot, but it's the same attitude mindset coming from that family. I have no doubt that Peyton Manning and Eli Manning are going to work very hard and have already worked very hard on their craft. I've sat and watched people like Doug Christie, people like Katie Christensen, former athletes come into a broadcast situation, and you can tell the ones, and you can tell the ones, by the way, on the Kings broadcasts. You can tell the ones that show up and they go, hey, I am who I am, and this is who I am, and I'm this name, and I'm going to do what I do.
Right.
And they mail it in. I mean, that is a presence right now on some of the shows the Kings do. And then you have people like Katie and people like Doug who go, oh my, what I did on the floor means nothing other than color. I really need to work and listen to people and study. And I believe the Mannings are those types of broadcasters. I think the show 3, 4, 5, 6 games from now, next season, is going to be loads better than last night's show. And I thought last night's show was enthralling and also a car crash.
Yeah, it was, if we're to sum all that up, I thought it was mediocre.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was good. I thought it was mediocre with potential to be good. It's interesting you made the Doug and Katie comparison because that kind of goes back to what I was saying last segment. I think for people like Doug and Katie, one thing that really helped them, though, was having that voice next to them, help kind of guide them through those initial, you know, hiccups that they have as broadcasters. And I'm sure they could speak to that as well. That's why I was saying I would almost like somebody in there, even if it's just on the interim, to kind of help lead the Mannings.
So you want a third person? I feel like that's the easy way out. I hear you.
It's not the easy way out because if you get the right person, they know that the Mannings are the stars.
Yeah.
And their job is to highlight and accentuate the best of both of them.
I think it's the cookie cutter easy way out. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying what you're saying wouldn't work.
Kind of are.
I'm saying I think at its best, a Peyton and Eli led broadcast at its best is better than a Peyton and Eli and third party led broadcast.
I agree. I don't know if just the two of them get to that level you're talking about.
It's a fair question. Number two.
Question two.
A full Allegiant Stadium last night. The Roomba was moving. First thoughts.
It's a gorgeous stadium.
Beautiful stadium.
It's a gorgeous stadium. Best on-field seats in the league. They got a DJ. You had stars there last night showing out. Everyone from Lil Jon to Dana White to Charles Woodson to whoever.
Bruce Buffer doing the intro was fun.
Bruce Buffer was fantastic.
He was great. And I think Bruce Buffer is like a big old dork.
Right.
But he was great last night.
Great jacket, too.
Yeah. Oh, you have to wear that jacket if you're doing a Raiders game.
Got to be honest. The only thing that bothered me, and I'm sure there's a rule, the simulated flame.
Yeah, right? I wasn't a fan either.
Not a fan of the simulated flame.
I'm a fan of paying tribute to Al.
Right.
Not a fan of fake fire.
No, it just looks kind of hokey. I think it would look so much better if you had a real flame. But I reserve my comment. Maybe there was some sort of Vegas code that wouldn't allow it. But if they could have done it and it was I think this looks better. You're wrong. It didn't.
I think I enjoyed everything about that. To your point, though, I hope they do that every game. I hope they take the opportunity to make Las Vegas, because nobody else is going to do it, a show every time.
I totally agree.
Bruce Buffer should do the intros for every game. Make that a Las Vegas specific thing.
Yeah.
Steve Aoki DJing.
Embrace the whole thing.
Embrace the whole show element of it. Really put on a performance. And I think they might have something there with Vegas.
I agree. Embrace it. Put in some neon. Put in some dancers. Put in some show tunes. Just do the whole thing.
Like, it's kind of hokey, but so is Vegas in a nutshell.
I need to hear more Sinatra. You know, the what was this group called? What was Sinatra and Dean Martin and all
the Rat Pack?
The Rat Pack. Thank you. There we go. All right. Number three.
Question three.
All right. Which team gained the most respect in week one?
I wrote the question, and I'm still struggling with it. Easy answer, the Saints. Easy answer, the Saints. I think the Saints now that might be a combination of the Saints looking great and the Packers looking crappy. But if I put that aside, listen, everybody thought the Texans were going to be like 0-17, 1-16. They demolished the Jaguars. But in the end, and this is the thing I do where I name off every game and kind of screw you over. I'm gonna go with Arizona.
You took my
took me three times. I kind of knew I was doing it.
Well, yeah, like you said, you're gonna go through every game eventually. Yeah, it was the Cardinals, not because they beat the Titans. It was the way they beat the Titans.
Right,
they manhandled the Titans. You know, it's been the Rams, the Niners, the Seahawks for so long. The Cardinals are here, and they are legit contender in the NFC West this year, and they showed that in week one. I think they gained the most respect.
And by the way, when we do talk to Sean, one of the things we're going to ask him on Reaction or Overreaction Tuesday is Jimmy G the worst quarterback in the NFC West despite winning 23 of 31 games as a starter? We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice!
Coming up next.
Alrighty. Halftime already? Come on. This show's flying by. We got Niners and injuries. We got Giants and victories. We got Ravens and Raiders and Las Vegas victories. And let's get to some intricacies on the Raider game, including an argument I was having on the Twitter. It was Lamar Jackson exposed yesterday, and not in the illegal way. We'll get to all this next.
Same Carmichael Dave time, same Carmichael Dave channel, but a new text line number at 916-339-1140. The Carmichael Dave Show returns now.
We are live from the Tent Cities, Commerce Circle, Sacramento, California. Sports Love Party KHDK. I'm Dave. That is Jay. We'll take you all the way till 9. Tomorrow, the debut of the Eric Armstead Show.
What?
Always at 8:05. We'll have Sean Salisbury on in just about 30 minutes. In both cases, we'll be doing that each and every week. Don't forget, Thursday, Chris Biederman, beat writer for the Sacramento Bee. Sacramento Biederman. And then Friday, the voice of the Niners, Greg Papa. I will be out of town doing the broadcast. Greg will be in one place. I'll be in another. Jay will be here. Should be smooth.
Should be fun.
Should be smooth.
Haven't had anxiety about that one yet.
Well, at least feel good about this. Where I'm going to be, it'll be the high that day, I believe, is going to be 108.
Where are you going to be?
Palm Springs.
Oh, you poor thing.
108, dude.
You going to be okay?
I don't know.
How are you going to deal with Palm Springs?
108. Have you been to Palm Springs?
No.
Okay, so how do you know it's how do you know what you're saying is
dude, it's called great? Palm Springs.
Yeah, it's in
how
the,
could it be bad?
It's in the Palm Desert.
You're choosing to go there for a reason.
You know, yeah, friend's birthday down there.
Yeah, and I'm guessing said friend didn't pick birthday location because it sucks.
No. A lot of golf. But
okay.
But I'm just saying
I have to be in 108 degree
thank
weather.
You. Exactly. Thank you.
Elitist.
Thank you. By the way, shout out. I've been arguing with Tim, the sensitive A's fan, who
where's
is also
Tim, at?
Tim, the even more sensitive Raider fan.
Where I haven't seen him in the chat this
he's
morning.
He's on the text line.
Oh.
And
I don't have that up for a good reason.
Instead of saying thank you for covering an out-of-state football team like we are and like we're going to continue to do later on in this show, he's whining about how we haven't mentioned Max Crosby yet. Literally, like, since 6 a.m. whine. And I don't know what it is about him. He's the only guy that just, if you cover his, he does the same thing with his A's. He just whines. And I'm like, dude, start a podcast. He just wants to, he sits there and listens and cries all more. My fault for responding to him, but I love all the listeners, even the ding-dongs. Tim, shut up.
I love Tim, but I don't love all the listeners.
Just listen. Listen to the show. Golly, that's the one thing about football I don't miss is come Monday or come Tuesday, every jamoke with some sort of stupid prediction over the weekend. If it, oh, I do, I told you, bro. Awesome. Awesome. Go start a podcast. You make enough predictions, you're going to get enough right, you're going to get enough wrong. But Tim, my God, needs a diaper, dude. Seriously. Give him a rattle and a diaper and shut up. By the way, speaking of whining. The NBA wants to do an in-season tournament. They want more viewers for their upcoming TV deal. They want to create more interest. So now this is developed to where it may actually be happening very soon. Some of the things they're talking about. $1 million per player on the winning team. Per player on the winning team. So even for NBA players, that's a big deal. The other thing I find rather interesting, Jay, is they're also talking about the winning team getting an extra draft pick where, you may ask, they would call it something like the commissioner's pick, and they would protect the lottery picks, but the idea is to put that extra pick between the 14th and 15th pick. So whoever wins...
So the 14th and a half?
Yeah, pretty much. So whoever wins the tournament gets the...
The
first
bonus
non-lottery, which the negative to that is, okay, so we're going to give the Nets or the Lakers or whoever, we're going to give them more help. But again, it's more incentive. What I do enjoy is that this is a one-off tournament. You play, you're done. But that also means, it really is complicated, Jay, because that also means that, okay, let's say a team like the Kings plays, they win their first game, and mm-hmm. then they lose their second. And odds are they probably lose their first game if they go by that type of seeding, whatever.
No, the Kings are dumb enough to win the first game.
Okay.
Come on.
So then you have teams like the Kings and others. The earlier you're out of the tournament, yeah, you missed the million. Yeah, you missed the draft. But now you've got this all this time off. Whereas you have the best teams in the league. They're the ones that are going to be playing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 extra games in the middle of the year.
I guess here's my question. Are they going to still have an 82-game season plus the tournament? Or will that kind of... Maybe they go down to, I don't know, 77 games plus the tournament. Because then it makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. That actually makes a ton of sense. And I like the idea of the draft pick thing. I really do.
Yeah.
I think that because picking, you're essentially picking 15th. Let's say we'll just move the first round to 31 picks. Mm-hmm. So you're essentially picking 15th. That's a prize, man. That is a prize. That is something, especially if you're a team that... is good, mm-hmm. but not great. Not one of the elites, right? Not a Brooklyn, not a Lakers, not a Philly, Milwaukee. You get where I'm going with
sure.
that.
Sure.
that's another trade ship to help make your team for roster improvements, not just using the pick.
But we got to motivate players. Players don't care about draft picks.
Well, no, that's why I'm saying $1 million, hey.
But if you're Kawhi Leonard, if you're...
Kawhi Leonard will sit out regardless.
Right.
he'll load manage that one.
James Harden, whatever. You do wonder how, on one hand...
But don't you want those guys not to be motivated?
You kind of do, and I also like the idea of them sitting out and costing the 10th guy on the bench possibly $1 million
who really
needs it, and having that internal strife.
Do you think they'll be, again, if it's not 82 games, and we go to a 78-game season plus a tournament, do you think that will then... The star players, for instance, will be motivated to play in that? Because there's not any added games... And you are trying to help your franchise, right? And $1 million, I mean, is $1 million regardless. And like you said, your 10, 11, 12, 13 guys on the bench, like, that's a big deal to those guys.
What about, and listen, this is a whole different combo. I think they would be more motivated if you screw the million, screw the pick. The top, you divide them up into Eastern and Western Conference. Then you have the championship and the tournament play each other. What about having the top two? Do the million for the winner, but the top two teams get a first round bye.
I see that. That's another prize to me as well.
That now maybe you have the players' attention where they're saying, okay, well, we're going to do this thing now, but it's going to pay off at the end of the year. We get, even if we end up being the third seed, now that's where it gets screwy. We got a first round.
Well, here's what's interesting about that. Let's say a team, take the Kings, for instance. They're hot, right?
Yeah.
And they win the entire tournament. But what if they had a record that fallen out of the top 10? Isn't that interesting, then, though?
Yeah,
and then they have a bye into the playoffs?
That's probably why you can't do it. That's probably why they're going to have to come up with something.
I agree.
Anyways, we've come up with halftime right now.
You guys suck. That's how my coach used to get me fired up at halftime.
It's halftime. As we get into the second half of the show, here's what we've been looking at so far and what we'll be talking about next.
There he goes. The pitch is blasted to deep right field. This one is way gone. Up over the arcade, Brandon Bell, the booming home run, is 24th of the year, 8-1 Giants.
Giants jumped on Yu Darvish early, a three-run home run from Evan Longoria. Tommy La Stella led off the game with a home run. It's the most home runs four that Yu Darvish has ever given up in his career, tied, I should say, for the most. He gave up four once before to the San Francisco Giants, and this is how the game ends.
Got him. And that's the ball game. And for the Giants, they are headed to postseason for the first time since 2016.
I know his name's Yu Darvish, but in San Francisco, they call him our Darvish because they own his ass. Am I right? I right?
Yeah, you're right. Thank you. All right, you're right. The Giants win their eighth in a row. The Giants, of course, don't pick up any ground on the Dodgers because the Dodgers won't stop winning.
Won't stop.
They beat those Arizona Diamondbacks. How about those poor Padres? They go from the Dodgers to the Giants back-to-back.
Right. Remember that great Padres-Dodgers rivalry everyone was talking about at the beginning of the season?
I mean,
the Giants and the Dodgers have just been making mincemeat out of them lately.
They really, really have. The Giants, just so you know, need to go 13-5 the rest of the year to break the all-time, including New York, a franchise record. I believe, what did we say, 10-8, I think?
Yes.
To break the San Francisco record. Still, I think if they go 13-5, they're winning the division.
So you say if they break the franchise record, they win the division.
I'm willing to say if they, with a 2.5-game lead, if they go 13-5, they're going
to
win the division.
My only counter to that would be the Dodgers' schedule is easy moving forward.
I could 100% see the Dodgers winning like 16 of their next 18. Counting, by the way, not counting what they've already done. Either way, the Giants become the first team in baseball to clinch. We're sitting here September 14th with a lot of time to wear those Built for October t-shirts. And now it's not over, though. You'd wonder, okay, you got a month left in the season. Do you sit on their laurels? They can't.
So the Built in October shirts gave me an idea. Hear me out here. Summer league is usually in July, right? This year was August because of all the changes to the schedule.
Yeah.
By the end of every King season, when the regular season's over and they're not going to the postseason, shouldn't we be giving out Built for July shirts?
For the Kings?
Yes. You're two-time summer league champions?
Well, why don't we give the Summer League champions $1 million in a draft pick?
Please.
Please?
That would actually be amazing.
They need it.
Summer League, we get like pick 59, though, for winning that.
Means a lot more to them than it would to the
regular. You get the 61st pick if you win Summer League.
Number two.
Yeah! Ah! That was nice!
That's going great.
Coming up next.
Coming up next, it's a Raheem Mostert highlight.
Let me try that again.
After Jay does the thing.
49ers, they start in the true eye with Kyle Juszczyk ahead of Raheem Mostert. And he gets the right edge and gets down the sideline, and he's gone! Raheem Mostert is gone down the sideline. First play of the game is a toss sweep and a touchdown! San Francisco!
That feels great, baby!
Raheem Mostert's knee does not feel great.
No.
He will be out right around 8 weeks. So next person up, Elijah Mitchell, you would assume, gets the start on Sunday, followed by Jamichael Hasty on that depth chart. And Trey Sermon, you got to think, hey, listen, if Trey Sermon's a healthy scratch this Sunday, he did something bad. He did something. If he's a healthy scratch this Sunday, there's something going on. There might already be something going on.
Safe to say we wouldn't be going to church.
To see Trey Sermon.
Well, you haven't made the Trey Sermon church reference in like a month, so
play.
I had to bring one back.
Maybe, maybe he decided Sunday was a day for rest. I don't know. Maybe he made himself a healthy scratch.
Possible.
Anyways.
Not sure that's going to work out for his career, though, if he continues that type of behavior.
Niners, Eagles this weekend. Eric Armstead will join us tomorrow at 8:05 to recap Sunday's game and to talk about that defense in the fourth quarter and to talk about some of these injuries amongst other things. We're going to try to have some fun with Eric this year. We're not just going to do X's and O's the whole time. We'll have some fun, get that personality out. Meantime, halftime number three.
Halftime.
Blitz is picked up. Jones is open. Jackpot, baby! Vegas touchdown. This time, no doubt. Put it in the W column, baby. This one's over. And a baby.
Okay, so I have an idea. Raiders, if you're listening and you're not, we are your California affiliate, but listen.
All ears on us now.
Salespeople, listen to me. Raider salespeople. You need to come up with some sort of promotion for your ad partners or an ad partner in specific that gives a discount of X percent or X dollars every single time during the broadcast Brent Musburger says, baby.
They'd go broke.
I mean, listen.
Mark would have to sell the mini Roomba that he's building.
What if it was a 5% off and you could stack them? I mean, let's count.
Blitz is picked up. Jones is open. Jackpot, baby! Vegas touchdown! This time, no doubt. Put it in the W column, baby. This one's over. And a baby.
That was three.
On one call.
One call. So 15% off shoes at Mervyn's.
There you go. You know what? That's what I can get behind. Any discount at Mervyn's.
Oh, boy. Baby.
Yeah. Jackpot, and you know what? Baby. If he reaches a certain level, everything at Jimco is free.
And how have they not sold the jackpot? But how is it not like the Rio Palace jackpot? How is it not the Wynn Casino jackpot touchdown?
How is not every call brought to you by a sponsor? By the way, before we get into the guts of the game, can we talk about Mark Davis's look? Dude, Mark Davis, number one, dresses himself, right?
100%.
Dude is wearing acid-washed jeans from 2001 with a white tee tucked in that is about three sizes too big and his white Raiders sport. It just looked like a whole dork.
I have spent way too much time focusing on Mark Davis's look. And I've really broken down the basics. Like, listen, he's a little overweight. He's not a good-looking man. I say this as a fellow member of that crew. But he has, for example, his hair.
Yeah.
He has straight hair. You can do things with this if you got a stylist.
He has the money to pay people to make him look presentable.
Yes. But maybe much like his dad. Remember, his dad was all about the jumpsuits. But at least that was cool.
The jumpsuits were a thing, though.
Why can't he? Mark Davis is wearing an all-white jacket. Why can't Mark Davis do the black jumpsuit?
Mark Davis' trends are 20 years behind.
I don't. Also, at the same time, when you say that, I wonder if Mark Davis started a clothing line, how well it would sell with some people, though. I could see it happening.
Oh, no, there are people that will definitely buy the Mark Davis brand, but for the most part, I don't think nationally and globally it would be a success. I don't think he'd be on the level of the Kardashians.
If you want, is that your call?
That's my call.
If you want to step out of your dad's shadow, go with the white jumpsuit. Why not? Fine, go for it. Mark Davis is a really good NFL owner, and he's had a really good last 5 years. And I know that's not popular to say, but I'm watching that game last night. And yeah, at one point I thought, you know what? You may drive a 91 Aero van or Astro van. You may look like you got your hair cut by every 80s mom ever.
Mark Davis drives a Pontiac Firebird.
Whatever he drives.
A Trans Am.
You are one goofy looking dude.
Dude still rocks the Corvette IROC.
The IROC Z28.
Yeah, that's Mark Davis.
But Mark Davis got Vegas to lay out some serious cash.
He got a free stadium.
He built a jewel of a stadium, and he's smiling. Now you got to give the man his flowers.
I give the man his flowers for all of that, but the on-field product, which we're about to get into. I'll give you roses. They're black and dead. I mean, let's look at last night, and let's look at since they brought John Gruden back on a 10-year, $100 million contract.
Sure.
Cleveland Farrell didn't even suit up last night. We're talking about the number 4 overall pick. What was that, 2-3 seasons ago now?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is his third year.
Meanwhile, Max Crosby was, what, 6th round?
Yes.
Max with 2 X's. So a couple of things here. Number one, before we get to his play, Max Crosby was sporting the double nickel black Jason Williams Kings jersey at his post game last night.
Automatically puts him on a different stratosphere.
Automatically, like right now, Max Crosby is a Pro Bowler. Round 4, excuse me. Pick 106. Right now, he's a Pro Bowler. 24 years old. Remember his rookie year? His forearm, his wrist?
One of the stars of Hard Knocks that year, because that was the same year the Raiders were on Hard Knocks.
Right.
And it was like, man, this kid that we took in the 4th round has really shown something in camp.
He was fantastic. Was he Chandler Jones? Not quite. Does he need to be Chandler Jones? No, he does not. Max Crosby had 2 sacks. Max Crosby hit the quarterback 4 times. Max Crosby was, and by the way, it's not just those numbers. It's his disruption on that side of the field that made Lamar Jackson have to think twice, that made that offensive line have to cover. You know, Darren Waller had a great night. Derek Carr had a great night. Josh Jacobs had a great night. Max Crosby is player of the game.
Oh, I agree. And it makes the Farrell pick so head-scratching.
Yeah, it really does.
Because same draft, Farrell's taken 4th overall, doesn't even suit up. He's a healthy scratch. Could you imagine if whatever they envisioned Farrell to be coming out of Clemson lined up on the other side, the other end of Crosby, just how devastating that Raiders defense could potentially be?
They probably would have already traded.
Wouldn't solve your secondary issues because that's a whole other draft bust. But I look at what you said Mark Davis has done in Las Vegas, and I look at the Raider fans. I look at the Raider franchise. I look at Derek Carr post-game with that speech and how much he just embraces being a Raider.
Mm-hmm.
He embraces his teammates and gives them all the freaking glory, man. And it's like, can you just put something on defense so that this team and this guy, he being Derek Carr, has a legitimate shot to lead you into the playoffs?
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that post-game interview. Derek Carr, we are huge Derek Carr stands here on the show. Always have been, always will be. And you just want to hug the man and run through fire for him.
Derek, how would you describe this game?
You know what? It reminded me so much of my career so far. A lot of this, you know what I'm saying? And I'm thankful for this group because on both sides, we made plays to help us lose it and to help us win it. But the only thing that matters at the end of the day is that score, as we've talked about. So I'm glad that we won.
I know how much you were looking forward to the opener in this building. How did this game, the way it played out, how did it compare to how you thought it would go?
Well, you always want it to go perfect. But playing a defense like this, I played them 4 or 5 times in my career now. It's the most difficult thing you have to do, you know. And it took us a while to get going, but once we did, we were able to score some points.
Now, after you guys were partying on the field, thinking that you had it won,
yes,
what went through your mind when you saw the ball bouncing around? and then pick it off.
I'm like, not like this. You know what I mean? Like, I can't lose a game like this. We did too many good things to get us in that position to win it. But the thing that I love the most, everyone to talk crap about our defense for 12 months, and they stepped up when we needed it the most and got us the ball back so we could win it again.
Did you think you were going to get the ball back?
100%. 100%. 100% thought we were going to get the ball back. Absolutely. I have all the confidence in the world in them, and it's never wavered.
Take me through the touchdown pass to Day Jones. It wasn't to Waller. No. It wasn't to Rods. It wasn't to Edwards. It was to Zay Jones.
That's right. Beautiful thing about that is there was an audible that Coach told me, hey, during the week, if we ever get this look, get ready for this play. And Zay Jones was in. Zay Jones, since he got to our team, every time I ask someone to throw, he's there at 6 a.m. Every time. He's never missed one. So to see him come up with a game winner like that, every last two times we've been Monday night, he has two touchdowns. I hope everyone in the world roots for Zay Jones because he works harder than anybody on our team.
It's week one, Derek. How do you top this one?
Yeah, we got an extra game this year too, right? Yeah, we got a lot of work to do, but I'm thankful that we won because going to sleep tonight, losing that one would have hurt.
Yeah, and John wouldn't have been happy.
No, you know that.
Oh, man, where do we start? Listen.
With a hug.
Yeah.
A tear in my eye.
Derek Carr, the moment his career is over, if he wants to, is going to be a number one draft pick for the broadcast booth.
You think that's the route he takes, though?
I don't know that's the route he takes.
Something tells me he's going to want to stay in the game.
I could certainly see him being a coach. I very much could see him being a coach. But he oozes charisma. He oozes leadership. And somehow the Jays and Kyles of the world seem to not J.J. Watt his attitude. There's something about Derek Carr where some of you people look at J.J. Watt, who comes off very similar in a lot of ways when it comes to leadership, deference, and supporting his teammates. But there are enough people in this world that believe it's phony. Derek Carr doesn't seem phony at all.
No, I'm not going to go as far as to say J.J. Watt has that toxic positivity because I don't think it's that. Derek Carr doesn't need a camera crew following him around 24/7 to show off how great of a human being he is. That's why I like Derek Carr. And you get
You're
him.
Assuming that J.J. Watt does.
I'm assuming, or why is it every time the guy does a good deed, it just happens to be broadcast?
Because people are following him around.
Oh, that's what it is. He's not asking them to. They're just magically choosing. Oh, hey, look, it's J.J. Get the cameras ready.
You think his agent is just calling up saying, hey, J.J. Watt's going to give popsicles to kids. You should show
I
up.
Think J.J. Watt has a crew ready for it. Whereas Derek Carr, and you just listen to the sincerity in his voice.
Yeah.
And again, I don't want to crap on J.J. Watt in this sense. I do think J.J. Watt does genuinely want to do nice things. But I think Derek is just, there's just a sincerity about him. When you hear it in his voice, when you hear him talk about guys like Zay Jones, when he talks about his defense, because that defense sucks and he knows it. But he's never, ever going to throw anyone under the bus. Ever.
By the way, the defense that sucks, and I'm not arguing with you here. That defense that sucks caused four fumbles, two of which they grabbed. Three of those were from Lamar Jackson. I had a guy last night arguing with me, and to be fair to him, he texted on the show, but he's done this. His thing has always been Lamar Jackson actually is a running back. He's not a good quarterback. He's won one playoff game. He's all numbers and no substance. And last night, Lamar Jackson fumbled the ball three times, lost it twice, didn't throw a pick, but just one touchdown. He did rush for 86 yards. Is there something to the idea that Lamar Jackson, though flashy with great numbers, ultimately has trouble winning big games? Do you buy into that at all?
No.
Okay. Neither do I. I just wanted to make sure. We'll ask Sean about that, too, coming up next.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
Reaction or overreaction. We'll play that game with Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback, Houston sports radio host, getting off the air right now and then coming to hang out with us. Always fun with Sean as we recap week one with him next.